Good morning. I'd like to welcome you all to our Martin Luther Day activities. Martin Luther King, as you know, we celebrate every year here on the campus, and this year is no exception, and we believe that we have got a wonderful speaker for you to hear today. I'll let Dr. Linda Norman will be doing our actual introductions of Mrs. Cordelia Taylor. But I just wanted to thank you all for coming today. My name is Dr. Jana Lauderdale. I'm from the School of Nursing. We are always appreciative of the support we get for these types of programs here at the university, and this year's no exception again. We have Colleen Welch is our dean at the nursing school, and she's always very supportive. Dr. Linda Norman, Dr. Dean Gabby, Dr. George Hill here at the medical school are always very supportive of our efforts, and so I'd like to take a moment just to give them a round of applause. Following our presentation this afternoon, the students, many of those are probably here present today, are going to be involved in our volunteer activities around the city. We have several agencies here in the city that participate with us. This is something that we hope is going to be a ongoing process, but it started several years ago. We have some students that are volunteering at certain agencies around the city, and they will be doing that right after this presentation this afternoon, and some will even be volunteering this evening at some of the agencies, depending on what they're signed up for. So following this presentation, you all can feel free to go, because I know the agencies are anxious to see you there this afternoon. So without further ado, Dr. Linda Norman.
Well, I'm very pleased to welcome you to our Martin Luther King celebration for today. And as a joint venture between the School of Medicine and School of Nursing, we tend to rotate that each school gets to invite the speaker every other year. And this was the School of Nursing's year to invite a speaker. Cordelia Taylor is one of the most amazing people I think I've ever met. I had the privilege of meeting her in Washington at the National Advisory Committee for Nursing Education and Practice, where she was making a presentation of her work related to care of the elderly. And we were just all amazed at what one person can do. And to tell you just a little bit about Cordelia, she began her healthcare career as a licensed practical nurse. And then she went back and got her Bachelor of Science in Nursing, and then on for a Master's in Administration. And she has worked quite a bit in different agencies, but patient advocacy has always been something that is near and dear to her heart, and that she really wanted to be able to have healthcare for people in a way in which was acceptable to those people and honored the individual person. She is a mother of eight and a grandmother of eight. She has five of her children work with her at the family house. Three of her grandchildren work with her. It's a marvelous entity of the family house is truly family for her. Cordelia most recently has received a couple of prestigious awards I'd like to tell you about. One is from the National Black Nurse Association that she received one of their awards of achievement year before last. But most recently, if you pick up the most recent issue of AARP, and I know as faculty some of you get this magazine, that she is the recipient of the 2007 Impact Award from AARP of the 10 people who make the world a better place. And she truly does. That she had a dream to be able to improve the living conditions of older adults, and in doing so has improved the living conditions of many, many people in the area that she has. So without further ado, Cordelia, we welcome you to Vanderbilt University Medical Center.
Thank you, Dr. Norman. And thank you, faculty and staff here at Vanderbilt, for inviting me here to be a part of your Dr. King Day. This is a very, very important day for me and for a lot of you. The younger ones, you just know it as another holiday, possibly, and the things you read in the book. You're looking at someone that experienced the things that you just saw on the screen a little while ago. So to me, it's very personal. But thank you so much for having me here this morning and allowing me to share with you a little bit about who I am and why I do what I do and all. As Dr. King's favorite saying is that everybody can be great because everybody can serve. And that's what my motto in life is that regardless to what you call to do, you can be great at it because you can help somebody else. I was talking to Dr. Lottie Dale a little while ago. Forgive me, I move about when I talk. I was talking to Dr. Lottie Dale a little while ago, and believe it or not, she changed my speech a little bit. I was telling her a little bit about my life and where I grew up and all. I grew up here in the state of Tennessee, about 145 miles south of here, and had a very, very negative experience, and she felt that it would be advantageous for me to share with you my experience, and it would fit in with what I was going to talk about this morning. When I was 12 years old, and this will tell you my age, when I was 12 years old in 1947, I lived on my grandfather's farm, which in 1947 was kind of a novelty because usually black people didn't own a lot of property back in those days. But my grandfather owned the farm. And on this farm was the large house where my grandparents lived. And we had three small houses around there that was called sharecropper houses. My parents lived in one of the sharecropper houses. And in this small town, there was only one bank. And in the spring of the year, everybody that needed to borrow money would go to this one particular bank and borrow money for their fertilizer, seed, and whatever else they needed. Well, this particular year, my grandparents and my parents didn't need to borrow money, and my father was very pleased about this. So he bragged around town that he didn't need to borrow money. On the way home that afternoon, riding a horse, the banker and the sheriff, I said the sheriff, followed my father out of town, knocked him off the horse, and broke his neck. And they went back into town, and they told the people, if you want to see a dead nigger, go out on the Covington Road. Now, this was in 1947. This happened to me. So what you saw on the screen is not fictional. This is the way we lived in those days. I grew up a very, very angry young woman until the night Dr. King was killed. I was a very, very angry young woman. All white people, to me at that time, had killed my father. When that was very, very unfair because only you people killed my father. And I really had no right to pay a whole race of people for what you people had done. But until the night Dr. King was killed, I didn't see it that way. When I was out of high school and married my high school sweetheart, we moved to Milwaukee, Wisconsin at 18 and 19 years old, and looking for employment at that time. But there was our Catholic priest in Milwaukee that was fighting for open housing, fighting for desegregation, and a lot of other things. His name was Father Brockley. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of Father Brockley. But I joined Father Brockley's March for Freedom, is what it was called. And the night after King was killed, we marched downtown Milwaukee. And I picked up a rock off of the street. And I threw this rock at one of the largest department stores in Milwaukee and broke the glass. And it seemed to me that the glass just kept falling for minutes and minutes and minutes. It wouldn't stop. And I wanted it to be quiet, but it wouldn't be quiet. And it seemed to me that God spoke to my spirit and said, "You are not doing this for the right reason. I was doing this, giving myself an opportunity to strike out at other people of a different race, which was not the right way to do it." And that's the night I believe that my eyes was open and God saved my soul. Was on Wisconsin Avenue in our open housing march. So that was the story that Ms. Lauderdale asked me to share with you. And a little bit about why I am here, though, and to share with you about Family House and who we are and why we are. I'm a registered nurse, as she said, that went back to school after having my family and took a job as a director of nursing in a large nursing home and didn't like the way seniors were treated in this particular home. Everybody was gotten up at the same time. Nobody was asked what they'd like to wear that day. At night, when it was time to go to bed, everybody was just marched into their rooms and put to bed and wasn't asked if they wanted to watch TV a little bit longer or if they wanted to sleep off or anything. It was just kind of rote, you know. Everybody went to bed, everybody was gotten up. At mealtime, everybody had to sit down at the table and eat at the same time, and the dishes had to be up at a certain time. And it was just not anything personal about it. And I just felt that this was not the way you treat people who have taken care of all of us in our best life. So I set about writing a plan to make some changes in this nursing home. Took it to the administrator and said to her, "You know, the people here would be happier if we gave them more say-so over their lives." She said to me, "Your job is not to write policy. Your job is to take care of the patients." So at that time, I did not live in a city. Like a lot of other black people who had financially became stable, we moved to the suburbs and left the inner city. And I just drive back every day and do my work and get in my car at 5 o'clock and drive back to the suburbs. Well, I thought, I'll tell my husband what was said to me today and see if he'll agree for me to open my own business. So I went home in tears, told him what had been said. He was reading the evening paper. He lowered the paper and looked at me and said, "Well, why don't you open your own?" And as he picked the newspaper back up and covered his face, he said, "And shut your mouth." Well, I took him up on that, and we took our money out of the bank. We fixed up the old house that we had raised our family on in the inner city. Mind you, we didn't sell that house when we moved away. We were renting it to other people. So we stopped renting it. We took our money. We fixed it up, and I was marching downtown to City Hall to get the license, and they said, "You don't live in Milwaukee County to get with that." So I went back home again. told my husband we'd take all of our money, and we can't do that. He said, oh, yes, we can. We came from down there. Let's go back. Not what I wanted to do. But I had to do what he said then because I spent his money. So I made this little house for sale sign, just a little bit of a sign, on this quarter of an acre yard and stuck it in the yard, house for sale. Believe it or not, within 30 days, my house sold. A family needing a place to move into town. So I didn't know the choice then but to move back to the inner city. We moved back right down the block from our original home into a boarded-up house where my husband and my son took the boards off of the windows and they painted it and fixed it up. At night, I would cry and pray and ask God to show me what I had really gotten myself into, because I just couldn't understand why God would allow me to get into this mess, and that's what I felt it was at that time. Well, we took in 8 people. This mission took on a life of its own. Today, we own 17 houses in a row right down the street. We own the whole block. Not on one side, but on both sides. We own the entire block. We have today 58 seniors that live with us permanently. We not only have 58 seniors that is no longer in a nursing home where they have to be gotten up at the same time. Our patients get up when they want to. We don't have breakfast time where everybody has to come to the table. If someone likes breakfast at 6 o'clock and a cup of coffee at 9, that's fine with us. If someone likes to stay up and watch the 10 o'clock news at night before they go to bed, that's fine with us. This is their home, so we treat them the way you're treated in your home. So now we have 58 seniors. We have an after-school program because our neighborhood is primarily young single women and children. We didn't start this after-school program because this was something that we thought we should do in our neighborhood. We started this program because the children made it known to us that this was something that was needed. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of Second Harvest's food bank, but we get a large portion of our food from Second Harvest's food bank, which is a place where you can go and buy anything they have in the warehouse for 14 cents a pound. So my son go every morning with our truck and get whatever they have to sell. Well, these children would be on their way to school passing our neighborhood while he was unloading the truck. They would ask for food because a lot of these children, the parents weren't even up when they got home for school. So he would bring fruit so we could pass out apples, oranges, bananas, whatever that they would have in the warehouse for these children. Well, believe it or not, after school, these same children came back. And they would sit on the porch on the stoops and do their homework and ask for help. So that they built themselves an after-school program. By the time it started to get cold, we couldn't leave them sitting outside. We had to bring them in. So right now, we have 37 children. And only 37 because that's as many as I can fit in the space I have right now. But we also have a medical clinic. This medical clinic was started because one afternoon, one of our children had an elevated temperature. So I said to her, I'll take you home, and we will have your mom call the doctor so that we can find out what's wrong. She said, we don't have a doctor. I said, then where do you get your care? She said, in the emergency room. I told the children in that room, only one child had a doctor. All of the rest of the children go to emergency rooms for all of the care that they get. Now, You in this room know what emergency rooms are for. They're not primary care clinics. They are not there to teach people how to take a temperature or how to swab a throat or anything like that. They're there only to meet the immediate need and send you off. But this is where the people in the inner city were going. And this is where a large portion of them are still going. If you think about the cost of a visit to an ER versus a visit to a primary doctor's clinic, is you know why the cost of health care is such as it is today in our country. But that's a whole other topic that I can preach on for about 2 hours. I'll go on from there. But we have the after-school program, we have the medical clinic, we have a program on Saturdays that we call Menovision. Our neighborhood is one of the highest crime areas, one of the most devastated, poverty-stricken, dilapidated housing areas in Milwaukee. We have this Menovision program because we are trying to change the thinking of a lot of the young black men in our neighborhood. So we have breakfast and Bible study on Saturday morning, and then we match the young men up with a mentor and send them out, and they do volunteer service work in our community. And this is a manifold mission because we not only are giving them a nutritional meal, but we're teaching them faith, and we're also teaching them to give back to the community that they live in. A lot of young people today don't realize that you don't get paid for everything you do, and we have to teach them that this is the way it is. We have another program we call Food for Thought, and on Tuesday evenings, we have catering service. They come in and set up the tables with white tablecloths, china, silverware, and anybody in the neighborhood that wants to come to dinner can bring whomever they call their family to an evening meal. So they get to have a meal that you and I go to a restaurant and have, but they don't have the ability to do it. But while they're having their sit-down meal, we have someone come in on lecture on different topics. And maybe one Tuesday evening, it might be how to open a bank account. It might be how to get a driver's license. It might be how to stay out of the criminal justice system. All kinds of things that will broaden the horizon of the people around us. We also have a nutritional educational program, and inclusive of that is a food bank. But we don't just pack a box of food and give it to people. They have to come in and learn how to shop economically, how to prepare your food nutritionally, how to store food so that it's not burned. So everything we do at Family House have an educational component to it. So it's a continuous, ongoing learning for the people around us. We also employ 51 people, and about 75% of them live within walking distance. So we employ our neighbors. So it's not only there to help seniors to have a safe, secure place to live, but it is also there to offer employment to our neighbors. We are a mission that I feel God has given me to open the eyes of not only the people in our neighborhood, but the people in our city around us, to show what people can do if they work together and try and make the lives of other people better. So I'm going to stop talking and allow you to ask me questions, because I tend to do better when people can ask me what they have on their hearts about what we're doing and how we're doing it. Thank you so much for inviting me here. I enjoyed the program earlier on the screen about Dr. King. It brought back so many memories, because I was one of the freedom marchers and one of the people who truly was involved in that time in life. Young people, to you it might not mean the same as it does for people like me, but thank you for recognizing it. Thank you for coming in this morning to hear me, and I hope I will have said something that will spark your interest in what you are going to do. And as I said earlier, everybody can be great, because everybody can serve. Thank you.
Are the interns or anything like that. I employ positions for time to come. We really appreciate your message. Could you tell us a little bit more about meditation? What type of things you do with them? Is there evidence that it's been successful in terms of the kick that you came in moving in a different direction?
I sure will. Meditation came about because when we had our Booth of Thought program, gang members started to come. And I was curious to know why gang members would come to Food for Thought. And I found out they came because they wanted a meal. But that's fine, because along with eating the food, you can always feed them other things as well. That's what we started to do. And we started to get gay members interested in what we were doing on Saturday morning, as well as a meal on Tuesday evening. When we found out these were gay members, we asked them to be guest speakers at our meditation program. I wanted to know why they felt it so necessary to belong to gangs, what they felt the benefit of being in a gang really was. And they opened my eyes as much as they gained, because I had no idea we had so many young men in our neighborhood who felt that those were the only families that they had. So we started to then talk to parents about ways of supporting your children. I am having a hard time, Doctor, with getting the older gang members to buy into the concept, but we are having a lot of luck with the 14 and down group, getting them to understand that, yes, we all need family. And I don't just necessarily mean blood relatives, but we need somebody that we can go to and share our concerns and our problems and all. Although I have to admit it's working me to death, because now I am the person that have to go to school when somebody's getting an award. I am somebody that have to go to a football game on a Saturday afternoon when I would much rather be sewing and making some kitchen curtains or something. But I go into it and I have to do it now. But our meditation program, we've only had it for about 18 months. So I don't have any real long statistics to tell, but just the interest that is showing and the numbers of people that is asking questions like you did about it and all. We had a gentleman last month that had been in prison for 17 years to speak to them, and I tell you, it was mind-blowing. He talked to them about how some of the gang members come out of prison telling about how good it is and all of this, and he told them that that is not true. He talked to them about the lifestyle that you have to live when you're in there, and you don't have any say-so about when you go to bed, when you get up, about you have to ask permission to go to the bathroom and all of this. And I think he opened some eyes about prison itself. So we don't have the statistics that I can give you now, but I can tell you just from the short term that we've had, we're going to have some very good statistics. Yes. Well, I'm starting to get interest. In fact, just since I've been here this morning, someone has come to me and asked for a card because someone else wanted to know how it's done and all. But once a month, I hold our question and answer period for our small business startups or anybody that wants to know how it's done. But I do have to tell you that, no, there is not a model family house in this country, but there is one in the country of Georgia, believe it or not, the old Soviet Union. A group of them came to Wisconsin, to the Medical College of Wisconsin, because they wanted to look at how healthcare is done in our country, because apparently they're having a lot of problems with healthcare needs in that country. And Michael Bolger, who is the president of the Medical College, felt that having them look at family house would be something that they would be of interest. So he brought them down, and they fell in love with family house, and there is a family house in the country of Georgia, and I have this huge plaque that they sent me, and they invited me there. They invited me for the groundbreaking, but my husband did not feel it was a good idea for me to go to Russia at that time. I didn't get to go, but yes, I'm interested in helping anybody that would like to know. Yes.
The older adults that you take care of, do they ever reach a point where their medical condition deteriorates to a point they're no longer able to care for them, and where do they go?
Yes, periodically that does happen. And it happens because the laws in the state of Wisconsin, the ones that licensed group homes or community-based residential facilities, which I'm licensed as, have a rule that says that I can't keep people that need more than 4 hours of skilled care nursing in a 24-hour period. So if you need more than that, then I'm supposed to discharge you. And you heard me use the word supposed. Because a lot of the doctors of the patients will write an order to leave their patients with me. But they do that because most our homes do not have licensed nurses, because you're not required to have a licensed nurse on staff in the community-based residential facility in Wisconsin. But I choose to have licensed nurses because I want the people to get the best care I can possibly offer them. So I do have licensed nurses. I'm a registered nurse. I have two other registered nurses. And we have med techs that do all of the passing of the medications, all of the vital signs, and all of those good things. But if they require more care than I know in my good common sense that I can take care of, then we must refer them to a nursing home, which hurts my heart because I know that they're not going to get anything any different, or not as much as we would give them. But following, you know, what the Bible says, when you're in Rome, you have to do as the Romans do. Yes.
Do you still live in these houses downtown in your family also?
Yes, I live right around the corner from the group homes. I moved back after they said I couldn't live outside of Milwaukee County. And I lived in a boarded up house for 5 years, I think it was. And then my husband bought several houses, tore them down, and built me the same house that I had in the suburbs. And you know, there is really a story to that too, because I have this huge big white house sitting right in the middle of an area where the houses around me are dilapidated and really in poor condition, because most of them are absentee landlords that own the property and they don't keep it up very well. But I have never had a window broken. I've never had a flower stolen. People don't bother me. If anything, they protect me. And to me, that says something about people and how you treat people and how they will treat you. Yes, exactly.
Could you tell us how you got rid of the drug dealers that were around your area?
I sure will. Yes, that's a story within itself, too, because when I moved back to my old neighborhood, the houses on the block where my original home was primarily empty houses, or else gang members were inhabited them. One of the houses on the next block in back of me was inhabited by the Gangster Disciples out of Chicago. They only came in town on the weekend and did business. You know, I have never seen such good business people as boy, they do good marketing. They know how to manage their money. If they use their brain for the right reason, our country would be in good shape. But I watched them. They would come in town on the weekend, I guess when people got paid. They would come in and do their business. But the street in back of us, and there's an alley in between, and then my street, they, on the back of their house, they had a window. And it was a drive-through. People would drive up this alley, and a bucket would come out of the window. They'd put their money in, and then the bucket would go back up, and then the drugs would come down. And I just got tired of watching them make all of this money. So I'd go to the police department, and I would tell them, I would give them license numbers and everything, and they just didn't seem to do much about it. One night, there was a shooting match from the people on the opposite side of the block and the Gangster Disciples, and I'm caught right in the middle. My son, who worked third shift, said to me, Mom, I'm not going to work for you anymore because you're going to get some of these old people killed. So I decided, well, I'm going to go to the police department this morning and give them my story of what I'm going to do. So I drove off and I said, I'm not here to complain, you guys. I said, I'm here to tell you I'm going to the media this morning because you can't do anything about my problem. And I walked out and got in my car and fast went back to my office. And when I got back, there were police cars everywhere. They had gang members on the street. They had them on the backs of cars. They had them everywhere. They got rid of all of the gang members in one swoop. Then I went about finding out who owned every address up and down the street. And as I would find out who owned the properties, I would offer them money for them, and I would buy them. And that's how I got all of the properties all up and down the street. And then I would board them up and rehab them as I would get money to do it. And there were people in Milwaukee who found out what I was trying to do, so they gave me money and I was able to rehab them. Our whole block is black and white. All of the houses are white with black trim. And we got little white lantern lights that we put right beside the steps all the way down the block. And people would say to me, well, why do you have so much light? It is so pretty in your neighborhood. They didn't know. I found out drug dealers don't like light. So I light it up in the neighborhood.
You've got to tell what you told the drug dealers, the ones that you found.
Oh, well, I just kind of, well, I have been threatened, though. I don't think I told them to this, but one day I saw a man who I knew was one of our famous drug dealers marching up and down in front of my group home. And I went out, and he had a little girl with him. And I went out and I asked him if I could help him. And he said, no, I'm waiting for somebody to get off work. So I asked him, I said, does one of my employees owe you money? And he said, that's not your business. I said, yes, it is my business because it's my money. I'm going to pay him on Friday. I said, so I need to know. And he said, yes. So I asked him who it was. He wouldn't tell me, but I went back into the group home and I asked them, who in here owes this man out your money because I want to pay him for you because he's not going to be able to come in our neighborhood anymore. So I found out, and I went back out. I said, now, would you like me to give your little girl some candy that had poison in it? And he said, no. I said, but that's what you're doing to our children and our people in our neighborhood. This is poison. So he reached under his coat and he pulled out this big gun. He said, I could blow you away with no thought. And I just turned my back to him. I said, then go right ahead and shoot me. You'll just get me to heaven a little bit faster than I planned to go. He used a few words of profanity. And then he got in his car and went on about his business. But we have those kind of incidents around our neighborhood now. I don't have a lot of problem with in the neighborhood with the drug dealers. I'm trying to think as I talk, Linda, which one I told you, because I've had so many.
The one where you told them you knew who had the money and who
yes.
had the gun.
Yes. We have drug dealers in our neighborhood over about three blocks away near where I stay. And I went out on the corner to talk to them. And I told them that they weren't very smart. I said, because I can tell you which one of you had the gun. And I pointed to him and I said, I know which one of you carried the money. And I told him, and I said, I know which one of you have the drugs. I said, so if you were very smart, I wouldn't know this. I said, but I can sit and watch you do your business, and I can tell which of you have everything. I said, so if I wanted to get you in trouble, all I'd have to do would go to the FBI, and I could tell them, every one of you, you know, I know your car, driver's license, and everything. I said, but I choose not to do this. I would rather have you just not do what you do. And I didn't tell them, but I also will offer them jobs. I don't think I employ them, but I offer them jobs just to get the shock on their face. what it would look like if I offer them a job. Because they are, they will say, you can't pay me the kind of money that I can make out here on this corner. And they're sad that we have a generation of young people out here who would rather do that and take a chance on their lives than to go to school like you young people are doing, or take a job and work their way up. They would rather take a chance on somebody killing them or going to prison and selling drugs. And I don't know how to change that mindset. And if anybody knows, I sure would like to know. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much for sharing with us your story. It's not only inspiring, but it's also riveting. I think that we learn tremendously about what your vision is of culture of community. Everything starts with the culture. And you mentioned that no one would have government involved because of the bureaucracy. Economy also is less important than culture. But I want to ask you, we have a great America. What's in the future? How do you see the future for inner cities, for community large?
Well, I think we as a whole have to take charge of our communities. It's time out for us relying upon government and relying upon somebody else to take care of us. I think we have to get up and do it ourselves. That's the main thing. We have to stop thinking that I don't have anything to contribute, because we all do. You know, whether it's baking cookies for the children after school, or whether it's walking to the corner, being sure children get home safe, we all can do something to make our lives better. So I think that's the main thing, is get up and take care of our community ourselves. So I think that's the main thing. But one thing I didn't tell you is I'm in the process of building a $7.5 million community center and a bigger medical clinic today. So we are growing by leaps and bounds. And I'm hoping that other people will look around us and say, if this little 4'11" woman can do this, then I certainly can do it too. Thank you so much.